Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Despite years of aggressive efforts to tackle the leading cause of preventable disease and death in the United States, tobacco use, largely cigarette smoking, still kills more than 480,000 Americans every year. Cigarettes remain the only legal consumer product that, when used as intended, will kill half of all long-term users. That's pretty scary when you think about it. Today, one of the newest dangers, both nationally and here on the Central Coast, is electronic cigarettes, or vaping. Often publicized as much safer than regular smoking, kids who never would have smoked a cigarette are now starting to vape, and a new generation is becoming addicted to nicotine. One of the main reasons students cite for the use of these products is the wide variety of candy or fruit-flavored options. This is a significant issue in our schools, and today my guests are going to be talking about this and more about e-cigarette products and what's happening. My guest for the day's show is Inger Aponitis, Program Manager for Tobacco Control at the County of San Luis Obispo, Courtney Rasmussen, Health Educator for Tobacco Control, and Asim Rahani, Health Educator and Certified Tobacco Treatment Specialist with Tobacco Control. You too can join our conversation today by adding your comments and questions, and we invite you to do so by calling 805-781-3875. And again, I'll give you that number a little bit later on, but one more time right now, 805-781-3875. And thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So this is a huge, huge topic that is coming up. And this, you know, we kind of thought we were on top of this whole tobacco thing. Certainly in this county, we've done a whole lot around this. Not so much, huh?
Yeah, we've seen 50 years of decline in tobacco use, and now it's really been in the past 5 years that some of that progress has started reversing, mainly because students, teenagers, are starting to use e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes are considered a tobacco product. They do have nicotine in them, and many of the big tobacco industries are starting to create these new products. So all the declines we've made over the past decade have really started to stall out or even increase in the past couple of years.
There was a period of time around 2016, I think I've read, that it was assumed that there was a decline in students who were using tobacco products, right?
Right.
But that was misled.
Yeah, so the timeline of events, it was around 2007 when e-cigarettes entered the U.S. market. And when I say e-cigarettes, that includes vapes, vape pens, mods, Juul, all the name brand products. Mm-hmm. They all fall under the same category. About 2007 when they entered the market, by 2014 they were the most popular tobacco product used among youth. And then, yes, in 2016, Juul entered the market and really skyrocketed in popularity. Juul is part of this category we call pod-based systems. And the nicotine in these products are salt-based nicotine, which is a little bit different chemistry. What it allows is the manufacturer to put higher concentrations of nicotine in the products and makes it a lot easier, less harsh on the consumer when they inhale the product.
Yeah, and so it's easier for them to smoke more, is it not?
Correct.
Because my understanding is with the salt-based products, doesn't it also prevent first-time users from getting that nausea that the body naturally reacts with?
Yeah, and part of the reason why they feel that is because a lot of the less harshness that you feel is because the nicotine is being masked by all the flavoring that is mm-hmm. added. So because you are using a product that is either, you know, cotton candy flavored or bubble gum or unicorn poop, when you're using the product, it just doesn't feel as harsh, right. Although you are exposing yourself and your lungs to a lot more nicotine.
And with the Juul product, when that came out, it really was marketed differently, wasn't it?
Yeah, when it initially came out, all of the social media ads and their campaigns showed these young, youthful people using them, and that really contradicted their message that they were introducing these as cessation tools. Because when you think of cessation, the people that we see in our quit smoking classes are 40, 50, 60 years old, have been smoking for 20 or 30 years, and have a serious addiction issue, but they were marketing these products to young 20-somethings. And it really contradicted what their stated goal was of getting people to quit smoking.
So the come on was, this is a tool to help you get off of tobacco products.
Right. That was their marketing strategy, although these products have never been shown to be effective cessation tools. Now, that's not to say that people haven't here and there use them to stop smoking, but we also know that people stop smoking through hypnosis or through
acupuncture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But looking at the population level, we don't have scientific proof showing that they'll help people stop smoking.
And what we've noticed is that a lot of those who quit cigarette smoking by turning to an e-cigarette, after a while, not only have they not quit smoking, but now they're smoking cigarettes and vaping. So what you're doing is
alternating.
You're supplementing uh-huh. your tobacco usage, and you're now addicted to two different tobacco products. And then you're like, well, here I am. Now I'm addicted to both. So I tell my clients, I will help you quit both. So.
Is the addiction, because the addiction for tobacco products, when they've looked at, you know, when I've researched that in the past, and I'm an ex-smoker from years ago, mm-hmm. and I know that that was a very difficult addiction for me to put down. But there's a triggering effect with tobacco products mm-hmm. that comes up much more readily than it does with other kinds of addictive medications, if you will. So you're being triggered to mm-hmm. want to utilize the product more frequently, right?
Right, and that's exactly what nicotine does.
It just
basically causes that addiction. You just keep wanting to come back for more.
Right, right. So What is the comparison of that kind of triggering with an e-product through a Juul or a vape mechanism or a cigarette?
I would say one of the biggest triggers would be the fact that it's just so much more accessible and just easier to use wherever you're at.
Because it's not smoking.
Correct. So people are like more comfortable using their vapes inside a classroom, inside a bathroom, which now are actually called Juul rooms instead of bathrooms in our county here. Adults feel more comfortable smoking around, their family and friends because they're like, oh, it's just a vape.
Is there secondhand smoke from a Juul?
Absolutely.
Or from a vape?
Absolutely. You are still being exposed to all those toxic chemicals from your secondhand vape.
So if that's the case, why is that not somehow regulated?
That's an excellent question. And a really unfortunate, case is that these products were introduced to the U.S. consumer market at the expense of the consumer. So what we're seeing now, for instance, in San Francisco, they just voted to ban the sale of all e-cigarette products until these companies can prove that they're safe to use. whether it's inhaling the secondhand vape or using them as a cessation device, which is putting the burden of proof back on the company. It's not fair to introduce these products, wait 10 to 20 years to see what the long-term health outcomes are to the general public, and then make a decision. We look at, for instance, cancer treatments, right? They go through years and years of clinical trials before they're introduced to save lives. So that's the burden of proof that we're talking about. That shouldn't be on the general U.S. population, or right now what we're seeing with our kids.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that I grew up where we used to do family trips. Mm-hmm. My dad was a chain smoker, Camel cigarettes, and inclement weather, we'd have all the windows rolled up, and mm-hmm. he'd have a little wind wing open
yep.
to let the smoke out. And we traveled days mm-hmm. that way. Yeah. Now we're talking about people smoking in the home again with mm-hmm. children, right?
Right.
Because they're not seeing this as being yep. a problem. Is there some, are people measuring that, or, you know, is there health concerns around that, and what's being done?
I think there's definitely health concerns. But right now I think it's mostly anecdotal, right? We yeah. just, they haven't been around long enough. We haven't had enough exposure to make mm-hmm. scientific conclusions. But as Nassim mentioned, people view vaping a lot differently than they do traditional cigarettes. So I was on the boat to Catalina a few months ago, and some woman pulled out a vape, and she vaped and put it back in her pocket. So that's one of the issues, is that these things are very easy and discreet to use. You're not worried about burning a hole in your pocket if right. you're putting your cigarette away. But they are, since 2016, they have fallen into the same category in California state law in terms of smoking and vaping is prohibited in all indoor places. So anywhere you can't smoke legally, you can't vape. And that's just a misconception that people really haven't caught up to yet, maybe, or an excuse that people use, oh, I didn't know that you couldn't vape here. Mm-hmm. We hear that a lot.
Yeah. What are some of the, now do you, all of you work with youth? Are all of you involved in working with youth around discussions around their use of cigarettes or e-cigarettes or cessation? I know you're doing cessation classes. Are yeah. those for young people, adults, both?
That's a very good question. So typically, or traditionally, I should say, our cessation classes have been usually geared towards adults,
right?
Because you know, we have a lot of 50, 60-year-olds who've been smoking for years, who've been smoking cigarettes. However, lately, with the rise of e-cigarette use, I've been receiving a lot of calls from young people saying, "You know what? I've been vaping, and I realize this is a problem, and I want to quit." So yes, we are starting to offer our classes to young people if they are interested. However, what we've realized is that instead of focusing on the cessation, it's very important for us to do the education at kids at a much younger age. So all of us here, do provide a lot of education and a lot of presentations to high schoolers, middle schoolers. I had the pleasure of, you know, presenting to a group of 9 to 12-year-old kids and the other day through YMCA. And it was so wonderful to be surrounded by all these young kids who are like, oh, smoking? We're never going to do that. Ooh, vaping? That's disgusting. But, you know, it's like I want to like hug them all and be like, you know what, please keep that innocence and that frame of mind in a couple of years when you're facing difficult decisions. So we're actually, it's interesting because in that same group, I had a young person reach out and say, I'm 15 years old and I've been addicted to nicotine since I was 11. Can you help me quit? So
Yeah, and that's one of the facts that we know with adult tobacco users, cigarette smokers, is that the average age of onset for a lifetime tobacco smoker is 10 to 12 years mm-hmm. of age.
Right.
So often we cite the vaping statistics or the smoking statistics among high schools, and we do a lot of outreach in the high schools, but it really does start in the middle and elementary schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me just add, these high school kids, I have past experience working with various youth, and here in now in San Luis Obispo County, working with youth from various high schools and having them be an advocate and stand up against big tobacco, and working with their local community members along with their city council and policymakers to help them recognize what this problem is that these youth are living through, and how that they can go about addressing, and how we can create local policy here to help us better protect our youth.
Yeah, and I want to come back and talk a little bit more about that. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. According to a research report released in December of 2018, nationwide, one in every four 12th graders in the nation said they'd vaped in the last 30 days. It was the second major national report of a sharp increase in e-cigarette use by teens and preteens, and the U.S. Surgeon General at that time called it an epidemic. The 2018 surge in tobacco vaping teens and young adults came as a double shock because the numbers had appeared to dip for a couple of years just after the U.S. Surgeon General first issued a major report on e-cigarette use. The dip was probably false because researchers did not specifically ask about the use of new and emerging products like Juuls. Many teens and young adults who vape do not identify as smokers or e-cigarette users. My guest for today's show to talk about this topic and what's happening locally are Inger Aponitis, a program manager for tobacco control at the County of San Luis Obispo, Courtney Rasmussen, health educator for tobacco control, and Nasim Rohani, health educator and certified tobacco treatment specialist with tobacco control. We welcome your comments or questions about today's topic. If you are a vapor and you have questions about some of the things that one of these individuals may be able to answer for you about vaping and some of the outcomes of that, you certainly can call us, and you can do that by calling 805-781-3875 and bring your voice to the conversation. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And you talk about legislation and, you know, what communities are trying to do in, what was it, 1991?
When the city of San Luis became the first in the world to ban smoking in all indoor public places, including bars and restaurants.
Yeah, and that was just huge. Mm-hmm. You know, I was hosting show on the station then, and mm-hmm. I know that we did shows on the effects of mm-hmm. smoking and the challenges of trying to get those rules passed mm-hmm. and changed. And so a lot has happened locally, but are adults seeing this as a challenge? Are adults seeing, do parents really understand what is happening with e-cigarettes and vaping?
I think, unfortunately, parents are uneducated in this matter. And that's something that we think is something that needs to be addressed. We had a parent actually reach out to us and express her concern, quite a few parents actually, about finding her daughter or son vaping, and they had no idea what the device was, so mm-hmm. they had to go and Google and find out what is Juul, what is a Soren, what is this product that my child has, and then we try to help them to see that they can be an advocate and to help make change within their local community.
So when, you know, if you can describe what a Juul is, if somebody is listening to this, it does not look like a product that someone would use for smoking, does it?
Correct. It does not. It looks like a flash drive.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is these products are constantly emerging and we have very little regulation and they are constantly changing forms. Mm-hmm. And so to say what every single e-cigarette is going to look like, there's always a new one coming out. And so unfortunately, we don't always know what every single product looks
yeah.
like.
And it doesn't seem like that can just be kind of coincidental, that those things are being put onto the market and being marketed looking like other innocuous mm-hmm. kinds of things.
A lot of the appeal is that they do look like high-tech gadgets. So mm-hmm. think about, you know, even an Apple iPhone. Mm-hmm. Apple iPhone doesn't release a product and just let it sit there. They're constantly evolving and adapting to keep people thinking, I need the newest one, I need a better one. This one, unfortunately, there seems to be an arms race to see how much nicotine they can pack into the devices as well. So, you know, hearing that something is more powerful in terms of nicotine delivery is going to appeal to a certain demographic.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially for individuals who think more is better,
right. mm-hmm.
or you're getting more for your money,
right.
the more
yeah.
concentrated it yeah. is, that's got a whole lot of appeal mm-hmm. to it. We see that with, you know, young people and drinking. If one yeah. drink gets you buzzed,
right.
then six drinks has got to be a heck of a lot better than
and
that.
And if we're thinking about these as cessation aids, why are we trying to put so much nicotine into them? Isn't
right.
the goal to get people off nicotine? And so the Juul, for example, has 59 milligrams per milliliter of nicotine, which is three times the amount of nicotine concentration that's allowed to be sold in Europe. So the number one selling product in the U.S. is not available for sale in Europe because Europe set limits on how much nicotine they can put in these products.
A pack of cigarettes compared to a Juul, mm-hmm. how does that compare?
So one pack of cigarettes has anywhere, every cigarette has about 1 to 2 milligrams of nicotine.
Each cigarette.
Mm-hmm. So that would be anywhere from 20 to 40 milligrams for a pack. So again, like Inger was saying, one Juul pod is like smoking 60 cigarettes. So that's basically what you're getting.
And when you have people who are coming into mm-hmm. or calling about cessation groups,
correct.
Do you have an idea of how much they're consuming when they get to a place that they go, gosh, this is a problem?
So every person that is interested in joining our program, we do sit with them and we ask them questions mm-hmm. that really targets, well, how addicted are they
right.
to nicotine and how ready are they to quit?
Mm-hmm.
So we do ask them questions as far as how much are you smoking? But then it is a little bit challenging with e-cigarettes because it's kind of hard to tell how much you are vaping because
consuming.
So.
And so one of the key questions, though, is how often or how soon after you wake up mm-hmm. do you take your first smoke or vape?
Mm-hmm.
And that will kind of help us gauge how strong the addiction mm-hmm. is. And we've heard from school administrators and other kids that they'll wake up in the middle of the night and start vaping, or they can't make it through a full day at school without vaping. And that's where it comes to this big issue of kids vaping on campus or leaving campus just because their addiction is so strong that they can't sit through a 7 or 8 hour class day without vaping.
What has happened to the patch products and the alternative product sales and use since this came on the market and has kind of exploded on the market? Have those things been used as much by other people trying to quit smoking?
What I can say right now is the same thing I say to all my clients, that an e-cigarette is not an FDA recommended cessation product. So in my mind, every client that wants to quit using an alternative or medication, it would still be the patches, gum, or lozenges. Mm-hmm. However, the reality is that unfortunately, some people are opting for switching mm-hmm. to e-cigarettes to help them quit. But we realize that switching is definitely not quitting.
Yeah.
And the gum and patches, those nicotine replacement products, are approved for adult use. So they haven't been tested or approved for people under the age of 18.
But you're saying they got approved without really being tested in any kind of terms of what the longevity of use or the impact of higher concentration of nicotine would be, correct?
Correct.
Interesting. We're going to take a call from Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
You have a comment? Oh, Steve. Hello. I recognize that voice.
How are you?
I am good. Geez, I feel like it's a throwback to the 90s, Steve.
Well, I thought maybe I could provide a little perspective there.
I love your perspective. And Dr. Steve was part of the whole attempt to have smoking be eliminated in public places here in the 90s, and did an excellent job of that. So,
well, we were 10 years ahead of most everybody else in terms of the concept of protecting everybody in the workplace. Mm-hmm. You know, non-smoking bartenders were getting lung cancer at a high rate, and after we did that, it went down 20%, and the heart attack rate went down 40%. And the Board of Equalization said that the bars didn't lose profits, more people could tolerate being inside them.
Yeah. And did you think that you'd be here now?
It was very different back then. They were thuggish. They came to town and they, from North Carolina, and they threatened our Chamber of Commerce, putting them out of business. Dave Garth didn't talk about it for years, and then he did, and then he became a strong advocate for smoke-free laws. And it got into the newspaper that these guys had come to town and made the threats. That helped pass it as well. But the tobacco industry has really changed their tune. You know, now Altria has bought up some of the shares in these aerosol companies. They want us to call it vapor, like a little bit of water vapor off a boiling pot. But no, it's a toxic mix of chemicals. And the group there today that you have is doing a great job of talking about the details of all this. But what's really depressing is that the FDA has not committed to a rigorous process of protecting young people. We know that it's just out of control with the addiction there. And a recent thing from the acting commissioner said, oh, it looks like we're stuck here for 2 years trying to make this decision. Well, that's silly. We know that none of these companies have applied as a cessation product, you know. And they're just hoping to gain a foothold. The former commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, said, this got away from us, it took off, and we didn't see
this coming.
And when we did see it coming, we were much too slow to get on top of it. So what he said is that we need the federalist approach to law here. We need cities where the political pressure is low to jump on board. We thought that San Luis Obispo was going to go ahead with this, but they've decided that it's not urgent. Well, we need the community's help in telling them how urgent it is. Ask the doctors, they know it's urgent. Ask the high school people, they've got drawers full of these things they've confiscated there.
Yeah.
Kids think it's cool. Well, it's not, and nicotine itself is toxic. It's not as toxic as old combustible tobacco, but it's really, it constricts the blood vessels. It's like a little shot of meth on your adrenal glands, and people then do more aggressive and strange and erratic things when they're using nicotine. So to summarize quickly for me, I would say, look at what Big Tobacco is doing. They've kind of given up on the smoked products as far as pushing them, but they're really still a big profit thing for them. But they're hoping to get the market back through these nicotine devices, and we must have these young people here that are talking to you today go to community groups and spread the message, and we must have pressure on our local city councils and so forth to do, like San Francisco or Beverly Hills or Oakland or many other places now and just say, not in our town. We're going to protect our kids. We're going to protect our population. And this stuff doesn't need to be sold. And if by some miracle it turns out to be a remarkable, helpful thing to do, well, we can always start it up again. But let's protect people now before they gain a lifetime of addiction. And thanks to Inger and Courtney and Asim for being there today. What number can they call, Inger, to get you guys to come talk to their community group? Or
you can reach us through the local public health department. The number is 805-781-5500. We're looking to, you know, just spread general education and then help connect community members with their local policymakers so that we can, like you said, take some action in our local communities and try to put an end to this epidemic.
And they're always very political, these people. I was shocked to find that the main sponsor for the Democratic California Democratic Convention was, guess who? Jewel.
Oh, you know, it's interesting.
I was, and then they also bought a new building in downtown San Francisco, the most expensive real estate market. They've increased their square footage fivefold, and they're really trying to insinuate themselves into the normalcy of daily life. They must be rejected soundly.
I read an article, you know, and I'm just looking at it right now, but it appeared in January in the Eugene Weekly, and it was some investigative reporting that was done. And in December, it was reported the world's largest tobacco producers and marketers, Altria, formerly known as Philip Morris, purchased a stake in Juul Lab for $12.8
billion
and gave 1,500 Juul Lab employees $2 billion in cash for their exemplary efforts and rewards. So
we're upset that the federal government isn't acting. We're upset that the local governments aren't acting, and it's all coming down to money.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things, while I've got you on the phone too, is can you talk a little bit about, you know, and you alluded to it, some of the health issues for young and developing bodies for use of these products, but you talked a little bit about the increase in heart activity. What about, you know, the other effects that are happening?
We can start with very young people. There's 300 people a month that are documented to be coming to emergency rooms or toxic overdose centers being treated for overdoses of nicotine.
And what does that look like?
Oh, well, it looks like they're overstimulated.
Okay.
Like I say, it's we all know what cocaine and meth does to you. It makes a big surge of adrenaline-like sympathomimetic material run through your body, and that raises your heart rate and your blood pressure. It makes you jittery. It makes you unable to really think coolly and rationally. It make you speed you up, make you drive a little faster, and take chances you wouldn't take otherwise. This is not good. And it's certainly toxic. Even has been shown to be toxic for people with heart disease who are next to this aerosol. It causes constriction of their blood vessels and puts them at risk of heart disease events, whether it's a rapid heart activity or whether it's a chest pain angina. It is an irritant. It's a micropollutant. It has the potential to aggravate airways in people that are susceptible to airway aggravation, like chronic obstructive lung disease or
severe asthma or something.
Yeah, sure. If that isn't enough, there's many others. Dr. Stanton Glantz at the University of California just put out a call yesterday to have people make a big list of all the direct toxic effects of nicotine. The chairman of the Department of Cardiovascular Disease up there for years has been cautioning people that that nicotine itself isn't safe. It probably augments carcinogenicity, even if it's not a direct carcinogen in itself. It inhibits adequate treatment for chemotherapy. This list will be out, and we'll get back to you at that point. But it's going to be a long list.
Well, I appreciate you calling in and giving a pitch.
It's always a pleasure, and thank you for highlighting this critically important issue that's just kind of sleeping along there and addicting kids by the hundreds every day.
Well,
thank you.
Appreciate you staying on this, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you, Dr. Hansen.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Steve Hansen, and he's still on the hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Thank goodness for that. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radios from Salinas to Ventura, and streaming all around the world on the web at kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. The voices you hear with me today belong to Inga Aponitis. Got that
you
backwards.
Got it.
Program manager for tobacco control at the County of San Luis Obispo, Courtney Rasmussen, health educator for tobacco control, and Naseem Rouhani, health educator and certified tobacco treatment specialist with tobacco control. They've joined me to talk about how communities on the Central Coast can work together to decrease teen and adult smoking and in turn save lives. This show is live and you're welcome to participate. We just heard from Dr. Steve Hansen. We'd love to hear your thoughts and comments and questions. You can do that by calling us at area code 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. And so when we talk about how people can get engaged, you know, first putting a call out to you, you know, if parent-teacher groups wanted you to come and talk to them about, you know, giving information. You said a lot of times parents are not educated about even what these things look like. That could be something that you could do, talking to younger students. A lot have indicated that school kids are not just starting in high school. We're talking junior high and sometimes even as early as sixth grade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another possibility. What else?
So when we get a call from a concerned parent who feels a little bit helpless, we get them to reach out to their city council members or local board of supervisor representative to tell them their story. Unless you have a school-aged kid, I think that your perspective on this issue is just not there. And so getting students or parents to share their stories with local policymakers is what we're really trying to encourage people to do. So we know that fixing roads are important and developing housing is important, but we really need to get this issue of teen vaping and how to control it on local agendas. It's a huge disruption in the classroom. We're not just talking about the immediate health impacts in terms of nicotine constricting blood vessels. We're talking about kids missing class or being distracted in class and missing learning opportunities. Another one of the issues when we go in and work with middle and high school students is, you know, we can't bring out our tar lung anymore and, make that connection with cigarette smokes and lung cancer. We can't do that yet with e-cigarettes, but what we start with the basics of addiction, what addiction is, and how dopamine affects your brain, and this issue of your brain being rewired when you have a drug assaulting it. You know, we know that the human brain develops up until the age of 25 or beyond. So it really is an important issue for kids to understand that when they're putting these drugs in their body, you know, it's rewiring their brain and setting them up for a lifelong addiction.
When Dr. Hansen was mentioning, you know, all the e-cigs and all of the vape pens and everything that's being collected by various administrators at schools, doesn't sound like it's hard for kids to buy them. There's supposed to be an age limit, correct? So
correct.
I'm assuming that's not working.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, these kids are able to buy them very easily. You go on Amazon, you go on eBay.
So
unfortunately,
just
it's
ordering them online.
It's social media as well. I have had youth in the past tell me that their friends are selling their vape on Snapchat. And so it's those platforms that, one, parents maybe aren't as involved in, but then, two, that aren't very well regulated. And so, yeah, there's a, are you over 21 to enter this site? You click yes, and there's nothing else to stop you from going ahead to purchase that product.
Yeah, so it's not just about the local guy that's got a vape store not being able to sell to kids. That's not controlling it.
Right. So we, Courtney mentioned the online sales, which is a huge issue, which is going to take federal or state legislation to get under control. But we do work with the Sheriff's Department and other local police departments to do compliance checks around stores in our county. And assuming that kids aren't being able to purchase them because they're not 21 is a false assumption. We know that the sales rate, the non-compliance rate for our tobacco shops or tobacco retailers is around 10 to 15%. So kids are buying them locally. And that is something that we can address at a local level by putting in stricter laws and stricter enforcement around the sales of tobacco products locally.
Well, let's start taking some questions here. We have three questions, or three callers, actually. So let's start with Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi, Dee.
I was going to ask about how kids were getting them, but I've got a comment I'd like to make. I think the reason that kids and people in general use various intoxicants is out of boredom. And I think one of the reasons, what I understand, is that in school today, I think they've cut down the physical education classes quite a bit. Is that the case?
I think so.
So the kids are not able to engage in vigorous physical activity, which is a natural thing for kids. And I think if kids are unable to do that, then they try to find escapes. You know, they try to find some way to get some excitement going. And I know I was involved with tobacco and stuff when I was young, and it was really an escape mechanism. Mm-hmm. And I was also part of the first wave of kids that moved up to Big Sur and started living in the forest, and we were largely escaping the confines of society and just trying to find out what real freedom felt like. And so I think the schools could do a lot to promote freedom and physical activity. I don't know why physical education was diminished, but it seems like there was kind of an onslaught against any of these activities back in the late 60s. And I think, some of the conservative government officials were trying to stop the whole hippie thing, largely because we were opposing war. And I think that, the hippies were trying to find some peace and excitement in their lives. And I think... if there's something missing in society, and there shouldn't be, people are going to seek it. So I think we can make things a lot more interesting for kids. I think it's difficult for teachers and stuff because you've got this regimen that you're supposed to enforce, and it's kind of repetitious. But I think we have to do something to increase variety and make things interesting. What do you guys think?
You bring up interesting concepts, Rick. Yeah.
So, Rick, here's a story from one of the local high schools, one of the sports teams, that there was pressure. There was a kid, a freshman, who started vaping after facing intense pressure from the upperclassmen on the sports team. So, I think that boredom and escapism is maybe one reason. I think the social pressure is just taken to a whole new level, you know, with this new generation with social media and such too. So it's really disheartening to hear stories like that where they are kids that are engaged. And that's what we're hearing, is that kids in leadership class and really high performing students are still getting sucked into this.
And thank you for calling and bringing in your ideas, Rick. Really appreciate that. Different points of view are always important. Let's go to Charlie from Lompoc. Hi, Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie, but a couple of comments and a question is one thing that I think we should. I've noted that the vasoconstriction from the nicotine causes premature skin aging. A way to target particularly women on that, and women who smoke, the skin ages faster.
Mm-hmm.
I think the peer pressure. If you can get some of your leadership people in sports to not get people into vaping, and the other question I have is. Is the I know one of the most more damaging parts in terms of lung and respiratory damage is the tar content rather than nicotine, and do the vape products have do they lower the tar content?
Good questions, Charlie.
And the other thing is and again, unfortunately, I think vaping has become, and particularly these Juuls, a gateway is becoming a gateway drug to cigarettes.
Absolutely, Charlie. We know that students who vape are, I think, four times more likely to use a traditional cigarette within the next year, so that characterizing them as a gateway drug is definitely accurate to some degree.
And again, this is an effort on the large amount of money that they're losing from tobacco sales, and it's a way to keep the sales up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're right, anyway. Though. There is less tar or no tar in the e-cigarette products, so that is one plus. And, you know, the people debate whether these products are safer than regular cigarettes. And it's, you know, it's like comparing if cigarettes are safer than chewing tobacco. I mean, they're both dangerous to you. They just affect different parts of you in different ways.
Right. And anyway, continue, and I think, you know, anyway, definitely emphasize, for the ladies, emphasize the premature aging.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I do, especially.
We'll recommend it for women and men.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Narcissism seems to be very alive these days.
Yes.
So I think that's a good thing. And I think maybe we have another caller calling in. So
go ahead. Right.
Thanks
Great
a lot,
show.
Charlie.
Bye.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
I'm not coming through. Here we go. You should be able to hear me right now. Here we are.
I do hear you, Tyler.
That's right.
You have a question or a comment?
You know, as the journalist here, and so I'm just going to throw a question out to
you. I was going to let you be anonymous, even with that voice.
No. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So I was a smoker for 20 years, and I quit through vaping. I'm a proud Juul smoker. I no longer smoke, and I enjoy vaping, and I've noticed an extreme change in my life, but... I understand the concern for kids, but I'm an adult. So why is there such a push to ban a product that is getting people off cigarettes, which are universally acknowledged as a death sentence? The act of smoking and the carcinogens in them, we all know, is what kills people and is terrible. But we're not making cities ban smoking and ban the products of smoking, but suddenly there's a push to ban vaping. It seems like an easy target. So I'll throw to you guys.
There you go. Thank you for speaking.
So there actually are cities that are looking to ban the sale of all tobacco products, with the acknowledgement that cigarettes, e-cigarettes, chew, all these products are not beneficial to your health in the long run. Yeah, you are one of the unicorns in the room that you are able to stop smoking. But I think what the ultimate goal would be to end your addiction to nicotine. Yeah. in the long run. So we know that Juul, there are some products on the market there that advertise their zero nicotine content, some of the e-juices out there. Juul does not make any zero nicotine products. So you are transferring, or you did transfer your nicotine addiction from cigarettes to e-cigarettes. So you're taking it maybe a step down into a step down in harm, but we still would say that nicotine, as Dr. Hansen had expressed, some of the harmful effects that nicotine has on the body. And so even with our clients, we don't want to see our clients depending on nicotine patches for 10 or 20 years, because that's still transferring their addiction mm-hmm. and their dependence to nicotine. So what the ultimate goal is to get people off nicotine completely.
You know, and I definitely hear you on that, and I think that's a lofty goal. I've paid a lot of attention to the vaping trend, and if you go a lot of places, I don't have the statistics to back me up on this, is my own eyes and what I've seen, but people don't seem to smoke as much. You go places, people aren't smoking. Yes, they're vaping, so things don't stink as bad. Like the secondhand smoke is a little bit healthier. Seems like this product is, we don't know what it's doing to you, but could it be that it's a little bit better than what we were doing before?
I wouldn't say it's better than what we're doing before. I think what you did touch on, though, is that it's e-cigarettes are renormalizing a behavior that we've worked for decades to discourage. So as we mentioned earlier, that it was just 1990 when we banned smokings in bars and restaurants, and now you can't imagine walking into a bar, restaurant, and lighting up. But you do see people pulling out their e-cigarettes, and it's kind of weird, and we need to make that decision right now whether we are going to allow that to continue and then renormalize a behavior that we've kind of squashed out, or we just we put an end to it right now and decide that it is fine for an adult to make that decision. They are legal consumer products, but what kids see growing up is going to affect how they carry on in their adult life. So when we talk to adults about this issue, we really want to talk about the example they're setting for the next generation, because I think any smoker will agree, and I'm not sure about vapers too, but they'd rather not start that habit, you know, in the first place. There's a lot of money that you could be saving if you weren't vaping.
Well, thanks for letting me jump in and play devil's advocate.
Yeah. We have about 5 minutes left. So I love that you were willing to answer Tyler's questions, because those are questions that are going to come from adults who are vaping, who looked at situation of they're not smoking now. So they feel like they've lowered their cancer risk. But what you're saying is you've still got cardiac risk. You've still got some other things that are really out there.
Right, yeah. And if 20% or more of youth, of high schoolers, are using these products, you know, what's that going to look like in another 5 or 10 years? Are we allowing it to, like I said, renormalize and becoming this world we live in, where now people are walking around vaping and just supplementing their daily lives with nicotine?
Yeah.
And if I might add, I think people don't realize when they switch from your traditional cigarettes to an e-cigarette, they don't realize the concentration of nicotine that they are using. I had a gentleman, and I asked him, he's like, I quit smoking and now I am using this e-cigarette. And I informed him how much nicotine was in that and how much it compared to a pack of cigarettes. And in essence, he had doubled the nicotine content that he was using. And so that lack of education for those adults who do switch to vaping, they aren't realizing that they are just, in essence, addicting themselves further.
And it's the nicotine that's got the addictive quality.
Yep. Yeah.
And then there's other ingredients in the e-cigarette products. So one of the main flavoring ingredients, diacetyl, it's this chemical that was used to flavor buttered popcorn. And then they found that these factory workers in the buttered popcorn factory were developing this irreversible lung scarring. And that was due to this diacetyl ingredient. So diacetyl now is found in a lot of e-cigarette products to enhance the flavoring. So we do focus on our education around nicotine, but there's a lot of other products in these that we don't know that's going to, what the long-term health impacts. And going back to the fact that these things aren't regulated, we don't know exactly what's in every e-cigarette. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of mystery around it. We don't know what's going to happen in the long term.
Are the dosages listed on the vapes and the
It's very, jewels? Very unclear and really variable. So if you look at a dual package, it says 5% 5% strength. It doesn't say, you know,
very it's deceptive.
It's deceptive. It's hard to translate. I know what a 5% beer is, but it's just, it's strange to read it on a nicotine package. And then for a youth to interpret that, or, you know, it's the kids are consuming much higher concentrations than they even realize.
So, what, you know, in wrapping up, what would you like people to take away from this show?
If you're concerned about this issue, which I hope we've convinced some people that they should be concerned, because what we're talking about is the next generation, the students and young people growing up, you know, what kind of precedent are we setting? If you're concerned about the vaping rates that we're seeing in the schools, we can act locally. So one of the policy strategies we have for addressing this issue is to limit the availability of the flavoring, because we know that's one of the main reasons that kids use these products. So 35 cities and counties across California have already taken flavored products off their shelves. None on the Central Coast have put forward such a policy. Some are working on it, as Dr. Hansen mentioned, but we'd like to see some local action. So if you're concerned about it, please reach out to your local policymakers and tell them to make this a priority.
And how can people get a hold of you?
So people can contact us or their respective tobacco control departments through the public health. Our phone number here in San Luis Obispo is 805-781-5500, or go to Flavors Hook Kids, the California website that will help inform parents and students about the dangers of e-cigarettes.
Thank you. I want to thank my guests today, Inger Aponitis, Program Manager for Tobacco Control at County of San Luis Obispo, Courtney Rasmussen, Health Educator, and Nassim Rahani, health educator and certified tobacco treatment specialist, both from Tobacco Control. Next week, join for host Fred Monroe as he talks about some of the benefits and challenges posed by artificial intelligence for residents here on the Central Coast. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. We welcome your suggestions for topics for future shows. You can send them to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us for today's show. Thank you.
Thank you.